guy's been sitting around up in the clouds watching down on us for the last 10 years, and he's up there now.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Hey, a lovely day here, and hopefully everybody's doing okay. And you look out over the mountains here and you just say, oh my goodness, look at that. How did they do that? It looks like a movie scene every morning. There's something new, something interesting and beautiful. And it's called Hawaii. For those of you, some of you might say it's a miracle. No, I just think it's as simple as it's a beautiful place, and we should protect it, care about it, because it gets us along. And I got a couple things I'm going to be chatting about. And I guess, well, if one would look for titles, we'll call this one a good start. If I were to title the show, which I don't really, but this would be a good start. And I can assure you that there's going to be someone out there that wants to express an opinion about something or another that not going to set well with you. But it's okay, you know, just take two aspirins or take a shot of cognac or something and you'll get over it. But this is about, you know, they're all in the air, and we've talked about this. Does Black Lives Matter? And on and on and on. And then you get the people that are not black, and they want to tell you, well, you know, white lives matter too. And in fact, Puerto Rican lives matter and all of that. And that is true. But I'm going to take you on a little journey of some work that I've been doing for a couple of years now. And because there's so many other things that draws my attention, I decided I'd go back and pull up my files and stop being so lazy and get done with this. And some while back, I actually went to the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., in those areas, and went up and down the coast to track down the, see for myself personally, to be and feel what it was to see where the people, African descent, that were enslaved and sold and traded and given and gifted and all of that. And I wanted to know, because if I start the conversation with any of you out there, you know, just it would be, well, it's a long time ago and you need to get over it. And inside there's that burning desire to say, well, if I need to get over it, then the Jews need to get over talking about Auschwitz, the Japanese need to get over talking about encampments and the incarceration. We all need to get over bad things that have happened to us if that's what one is going to suggest, that African Americans should get over it. But this journey that I took was not in answering to their response or what they would say, that I need to get over it, or we have a chip on the shoulder. I want to understand, because I don't think the average person really understand the significance of what transpired. And even today, these things that transpired or took place reveals themselves in different fashion, different forms, and we see people being shot on the streets by policemen, and we run to their defense and say the policemen, are doing good, and just a few people out there, and the blacks are shooting blacks, and you know, all this, it's basically nonsense. And then you take, for example, you have this officer in Illinois, up around Fox Lake, who, you know, the police were trying to create a campaign that Black Lives Matter was threatening the lives of cops and around the country and what have you. And here comes a a policeman, and he's now, it's determined that he actually killed himself there in Illinois. But initially it was described as a black person involved and they were on the hunt, and you see, so everybody get heated. So on this little journey that I took there at going down to Monticello, going to Eastland, Maryland, going down to Georgia, going to Arlington, and going to the slaveholding sites and what have you, and going to the library and the Library of Congress, because I wanted to understand for myself, based on what was available to me and what is available to you in documents and what have you. And basically, I started at Alexandria, Virginia. And, you know, that was a major port of embarkation in the domestic trade, slave trade, right? We talk about the slave trade that came from Africa to the shores of America and the Atlantic and those states and by the Dutch and what have you. But we don't really talk that much about or know that much about the actual domestic slave trade. See, in 1807, they abolished the import of slaves into the United States directly from Africa. And so I was able to get a number of the manifests that these manifests reveals a lot, and it's a very painful situation, let me tell you. And that is, when you see this, just last night I was looking at one where the average age was 18 or 20, and nothing, I think there was one person aboard this one vessel, and it had one person 45 years old, and the rest were, and I'll read them as we go on through the show here, but again, I'm not stumbling, but it's sort of painful, and we'll talk about Bolivar County, Mississippi, where I grew up, and there's an actual study, someone provided me a copy of it in Ancestry.com, but it was compiled by a gentleman, and we'll give him credit for it when we get to that. But the earlier show, I heard the number of people calling in. And I couldn't help but think that I'm going to read to you just one manifest, and then I'll read more, from the District of Pensacola. And let me lay this out first, because you see, what they did was there were several ships involved. There were steamers and schooners. And one ship called the Rob Roy, which is a steamship, the schooner Magnolia, schooner Shenandoah, the schooner Splendid, the Mameta, that's a steamboat, and schooner Charles in New Orleans. And so internally within the U.S., supposedly this period of time is after the abolishment of the import, making it illegal to import directly. But while it was illegal, they were still being smuggled into the country, Africans, from Africa. And really wasn't that much of an enforcement, even though the law had passed. So we're going to be talking about this period of between 1937, 38, and the 20s, 1800s. It's when this 1838, but so the ports that some would end up starting from Yorktown, Virginia, and head to Pensacola, Florida. Some would go to Mobile, Alabama. Mobile was quite an active place for transport and trade of slaves in the domestic trade in the transport. Pascagoula, Mississippi. Charleston, South Carolina. Baltimore, Maryland. As you know, the Mason-Dixie line hangs out up there, and so it's still the South in many of those places. People don't realize that, but below the Mason-Dixie line is the southern states. But many of the African Americans were transported aboard these vessels to the deep South, New Orleans. And what caught my attention, and drawing a parallel to the show that was earlier preceding me, there was a discussion of religion. And many of things happen under the name of religion and the beliefs. For example, this manifest reads, Port of Pensacola, November 19, 1838. And it gives the name of the person, Mr. Barker, who's a shipper of, and it quotes, was a shipper of the slaves named and particularly described in the above manifest. Master of the steamboat's Champion, do solemnly and sincerely and truly swear, according to the best of my knowledge and belief, that the persons above described were not imported into the United States since the first day of January, 1803. And that under the laws of the territory, they are held to service and labor. So help me God. Now, that's a very convincing thing. I mean, all of this, so help me God. And what he's speaking about is actually human beings. So I just had to chuckle and says anything can happen under the banner of religion, I guess, as long as you swear to that and sincerely and with the deepest thought and kindness, you are caring. You're exempted. You can go ahead and your actions are allowed or permitted. And so this is a very interesting set of documents, and I'm posting some of them up on carolcox.com just for the sake of those of you who want to see one. And I want you to look at that and see when you hear people give the names like Carol Cox. How did I get my name? Well, you know, obviously if my parents are African descent and their parents are, then clearly weren't many Coxes traveling through the jungles or the savannas or what have you. And we ended up here. For example, mine was actually, we were Dukes by legal name. And my grandfather actually ended up involved in an altercation, and the man died. And he went on the lam and changed his name to Cox. And to date, the court records that I obtained show that he was indicted. His first name of Horace Dukes was actually an indictment was issued, then an indictment for his alias was issued, and he was on the lam for about 17 years or so. And so he acquired the name Cox, and so therefore that's how we got our name through that. But initially it was Dukes because that's who were the last owners of my family. So I want you to go to that and take note of the names of these individuals that were aboard. And you must know that there were no last names. So here's one that was being transported from Richmond, and it was going down to Charleston, District of Port of Charleston, and then going to Pontchartrain and those areas down in New Orleans. And the name was, this is what a manifest looked like. And you, as again, you go to carolcox.com and you can look at it yourself. But here's the name, Adam, and what it would say, the first name. And the name, the sex would be male. And another name is Rachel, which is female. And they would give the height, give the age. So it would go name, Adam, sex, male, age, about 55 years old, height, 5'10", and class, black. And it would give the owner a shipper's name. Now, this isn't cargo that you bought from Sears or Spiegel's. This is human beings. And they were being placed on aboard ships after being purchased, and or stolen or what have you, and transported aboard these vessels. Now, here's one, District of Mobile, Port of Mobile, and it is on the Mineta. And again, just what you'll see on these manifests, human beings being transported, but what you'll actually see is just the first names, because you see they didn't have any last name. And this is in the 1800s, folks. With some of you out there suggest, well, get over it. It's about 300 years. Not really. It's not 300 years. 1500s, earlier documented Africans in the Americas. So here's one, Nelson Bonnet, 15, and here is the age of one shipment. 21 years old, 20, 24, 24, 20, 18, 21, 24, 22, 32, 20, 28, 40, 14, 24, 45, 27. And this is when you read and you see these human beings being stacked, not in a ship coming from Africa, but within the confines of these United States as we knew it then. So, again, it's telling that if the question is, does Black Lives Matter, you look at this, when has it ever mattered? And you look, here's 61 people on one boat. And here are children that are 1 year old, 18 months, 2 years and 7 months, 1 year old. Child, it's described as child Dinah, Louisa, 7, Mary, 5, Philip, 7, child Robert, 18, London, 5. This is their ages now. Mana, 10, Chad, 8, and goes on. And the oldest person in this shipment is 45 years old. So, though they abolished this practice and made it illegal, did they cleanse the human beings of their mindset that permitted them or encouraged them or that found themselves attractive to this trade of human flesh? I don't think so. So when you see behavior acted out by policemen or courts or people that are want to just exhibit hatred, and in their ways and in their actions or what have you, in the writing of laws and legislation, did we ever really get over it? This is a substantial act of inhumanity to human beings. I don't recall ever reading where there was a class where people would come and cleanse themselves and disclose that they have done this to prepare themselves to accept African Americans, or did they just build on to the old feelings, the old practices, and mask them and then adopt some of the, but still viewing African Americans as less than human beings? Apparently, there is an element of that to some degree, that we African Americans are just that, less than human beings, even in today's modern society with the cell phones and Twitter and, you know, and all of that. Again, this is that little journey. I just thought I wanted to share this with you. But imagine this ship of all of these young people being shipped to the Deep South. To the Deep South where individuals are going to work them for free. Maybe a small meal or so. But they were subjected to the horrendous beatings and what have you. And again, while this, some of you will understand and others will once again say that we're just too sensitive. And how do you not be sensitive? Because it is never explained how we got here to this thing called slavery. No one has ever apologized. No one. I mean, where there is, and then clearly accept the responsibility. And so in my efforts to go through all of this, I wanted to know how high in the United States government these things go, participants in the government, or who condone these things or these practices. And, you know, you don't want to go off half-cocked, and you don't want to draw conclusions that are not factual. But we all know George Washington, the father of our country. And I felt that let's start there, because if we can show that this man's heart is cleansed, his hands are cleansed, then we should adopt every thought about America and all the good and get over it. But I began to look, and I went and pulled up his will while up there in D.C., and you'll see in there, he actually owns slaves. That's no secret. But what we don't know is that there's a document that I was able to obtain, and I'll disclose where it came from so that you don't think that I pulled a Dan Rather and changed the numbers. But at you see, George Washington had several farms, and also the mansion house. So this is what he had. He had adults at the mansion house was 45 male slaves. Children, there were 11 children, slave children, there at his house at the mansion. For a total of 56 that was at the mansion. Then he also, and the ages were, I won't bother with the ages, but a total of, in his complete possession of slaves, George Washington, the president of the first president of the United States, the father of our country, owned 316 slaves. He had 29 at the river farm. Of those were 17 males that were, I'm sorry, 12 males and 17 children. And then he also had 20 females at that river farm, 8 children, and 28 males. So, again, and I'm just going through this, that the Hudot, I think it's called the Hudot Hole. He had adults were 6, children were 9, the females, he had 16 females there. At age by 22, so the total is 41 there. But anyway, this is the father of our country that were involved in making legislation, passing legislation that could have, we could have gotten past this thing called slavery long time ago. But if you are benefiting from it and participating in it, the practice, then you can see why it lingered. And so if it goes through the halls of the White House and our first president, then why do you suppose we have these lingering hatreds and injustices that we see presented? I can't say they're all directly related, but no one can say to me that there's been a formal process in any of the people that participated in this industry or this business or this practice, this inhumane practice, that they cleanse themselves and made whole or attempted to make whole. And in some of these documents that I have, and I'll share just reading straight from them. And this was a horrible journey because you try to seek an understanding. You know, you don't want that PBS moment where they tell the story in 30 minutes ago, because around me, I want to know why that when I drive the streets, I'm being pulled over. When I drive and go into a store, I'm being followed around. When I grew up, my grandmother would have to go in, or aunts or uncles would go in with a string to measure my clothes because they didn't want us to try on the clothes in the shop, you know, or we'd be followed around. These are realities. Now, some of you might be inclined to call and introduce some nonsense, but it would be extraneous to the reality of what transpires and what exists now and what persists. And so I asked the question, why would anybody be motivated to question the issue or take issue with people proclaiming Black Lives Matter? I don't know the political aspect of it, but why? So I can see why. Because deeply entrenched in the ways, and many families benefited, and I would say most of America benefited, though some may wanted to abolish it and attempted to abolish slavery, but most Americans benefited from it. and many of them in England benefited from it because it was a matter of producing materials and cottons and those things and shipping them out to a bigger market. And so I don't see the Brits getting involved and apologizing. I don't see the Portuguese getting involved in apologizing. I don't see anyone, the Dutch. But we all think that they were really good people, but on the backs of African Americans and children. I mean, here's one that was sent on the schooner Eagle. And it was from Yorktown and was headed to the port of Mobile. And what you show you how senseless it is and how difficult it is to read these things when you without feeling some sadness or it triggering some sad thought. Here's a little girl by the name of Millie. And what's interesting, you look at a manifest that for one ship, you'll see same names, the same first names, like Delphia, Eliza. You'll see Dab Henry, Harriet, and Millie. And that would be all that it was used to describe the person. And you see these names repeated. I mean, just as common as this is what they were, cargo. And the only reason they really had a name at that time was because it was some way of documenting that this person, on the name on paper matches a person, and someone would sign an affidavit to the ship's captain so that the collector would charge, the customs collector would be on top of things and charge. But again, here's a Millie, for example, was age 1 year old, height 2 feet 4 inches. Harriet was a little girl, 3 years old, 2 feet 9 inches. Dap Henry, a boy, was 5 years old and 3 feet 5 inches. So transporting little kids. So this means that, is it possible that they were sold in Yorktown or area or in those areas surrounding and transported there? Where are their mothers? Where are their fathers? Did someone in Mobile, Alabama buy them? And so here's a number of ways that it could have happened. And I was able to document some of it. Didn't get everything because I figured enough was just being able to lay it out. And so I also went to various states and pulled up the will, the book that register records all of the wills. And I'm going to just read a couple of these to you and share with you. Jefferson Naylor's will. Jefferson Naylor's will. In feeble health, to son Jefferson, land on Silver Creek in Yazoo County, that's in Mississippi, in the event of his death without children, this land to go to Louis Barnes' children. Also following slaves, 65, all named, 22 slaves to Louise Barnes are her children. Names slaves that Louise Barnes has already and is to keep quiet, and keep quite a number. Grandson John Barnes, grandson daughter, anyway, that was one. So you could become, you could be owned by one family, and that family, patriarch dies, and in the will, you willed to the daughter, or to the son, or to a friend. This is a will of Peter Phil Jefferson of Hinds County, Mississippi, to my affectionate sister, Mrs. Ann Peebles, of Brownville, Tennessee, $7,000, and the proceeds of sale of Negro Girl Jane, which I had formerly given and which I lately brought from Tennessee to sell for her. So I really wanted to track down and, you know, to say, well, they were transported. That's one thing. How did they get there? What was behind it? And so does Black Lives Matter? I don't think any of you that would raise that question and challenge it had a good meal or something. Something went wrong in your day to come up with that, because I've heard ignorance is bliss. But then when you dismiss people and their hurt, a genuine hurt, and you tend to suggest to them that their passion, their pain, their experience in life, the negatives, is misplaced, that their concern and them vocalizing it is misplaced. So that's another example of how they got there. Here's another. Will of Thomas Wright, once of Essex County, Virginia, now of Holmes County, Mississippi. The Negroes to be hired out year after year, but I do not want and wish my son Thomas or his wife to hire any. Should there be an accumulation of funds from the hire of my Negroes and other sources after doing as directed to and by my son Kirkham Brantley, all right, I wish it every year set apart in good hands and every 2 years divided. So here is one in his will. He's saying, I want them to be hired out, but not be kept by my family. So is that his conscience getting him? He's about to go off to see God, the same God that watched over him every day, supposedly, and failed to whisper in his ear to say, "You, this is wrong." But I guess if you wanted to be prosperous and be rich, you can look at African Americans and dismiss them as being chattel, not cattle. I think cattle were more important because they were to them. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, Carol. Interesting discussion, you know. What has always bothered me is why, you know, the Japanese, that were interned in World War II, they got an apology and they got some reparations. And why not, the descendants of the slave, they should be, compensated too and apologized for. Just like even the Hawaiians got apologized, they didn't get a compensation, but they're getting some kind of compensation. And I think as a country, we need to do that in just a symbolic way, but put money in that too, mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that an apology. My purpose is to show the historical, the potential for it all to be, and why we see some of the behavior that we witness today.
Oh, sure.
In the system. Why we witness today the injustices in the distribution of wealth. Why we see the injustice of imprisonment. Why we see the injustice of enforcement. Why we see the injustice in education. You understand?
All nine yards.
An apology is a quick fix in a sense, but it's that.
Like the Hawaiians.
Well, it's not just like the Hawaiians. It's nothing. They weren't sold. They weren't plucked.
No,
they weren't
no.
plucked from their families and taken here. Not to say that one should be played down and given a more important role than the other. This is, people want to talk about it. So this is my effort to talk about it, really talk about it and tell you in your face, this is what you did. You traded, you sold us, you gifted us, you hired us out, and you still You burned us, you mobbed us, you lynched us. And these all didn't just during that time of slavery.
You know what? And down south, especially down south, throughout the country, the attitudes, hey, man, we own you, so what the right do you have? And then I had to pay you money. I had to put you on sharecroppers, and now you want free labor rights and all that kind of stuff. You want to do like everybody else, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that that resentment that they have, hey, you took away our rights to have our labor, free labor, you know, all these years is still part of that. The resentment, which is unbelievable. And of course, it built into that is the racism, the discrimination, the racism, the way we've treated folks, that don't exactly have our exact color and our,
here's a man expressing, and there's another one where I was shared in later discussion that they actually, upon their death, they set their slaves free. You see, and complimented them for working. So the point here is that if we're going to take something so critical and so important and dismiss it with some cocky attitude about, well, you know, Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter too. Well, then, damn it, get out there and start fighting about it, right? Get out there and start expressing the dislikes about it if White Lives Matter. You know, there are more white children out there that are being suffering and working for nothing and raped and being sold into slavery. Get out there and speak up, but don't, you know, train your barbs on black people or African Americans because they dare to ask the question, when and where and how will Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, we really need this conversation really big about the whole way our whole attitudes about race and everything. It needs to really get out there. If we're ever to get over this silly thing that, I'm better than you, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think it's something more, you know, from an economical motivation.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, money is blinding, right? It hardens your heart in a sense, and we're talking about economics, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so some people go, well, there they go again, talking about that. No, it's an understanding the same things that we witness in these documents and what transpired in those days and those yesteryears is present, and we've never addressed them. If we get a handle on this particular one and approach it differently, then I think this thing called the middle class, the upper class, and the, you know, the lower class, middle class, right? I think that people, the quality of life will be better off if we all adopted an understanding of what transpired or took place.
Oh, yeah.
In this situation.
Yeah.
You see, because you can remove the face or the race or the skin and look at it now and say that we see the same things. There are people making millions and billions while others are starving. So,
Carol, what do you think? What's your take on Bill Cosby? And
I don't know. I'm not in the mode of talking about Bill Cosby. I think that if the women submitted to the courts, they should chew him up for lunch if he's guilty. I mean, he should die penniless. And in fact, that's when it'd be okay if what he is accused of doing. I think in my world, in my book, I think he should be a slave for the rest of his life, paying back for eternity.
You know, I always sensed a real arrogance in him in the beginning. I mean, he says, you know, you black folks, you just have to pull yourself up to by your bootstraps. That's been kind of his attitude. He was preaching that, you know. Well, it's because you just don't get yourself educated enough. You know,
I've been there where you people have wronged me, and you speak out, and people say, "Well, you know, you don't have the proof." But if any portion of what is said is true, and I'm not doubting anyone, I just haven't seen the process play out. If it is true, then he should be receiving the harshest punishment. I mean, strip him of every nickel that he's ever
had. Yeah.
And it's nothing funny about
it. Talk about reparations.
Okay. Hold on. Let me. Caller, good morning. Thank you for waiting. You have a comment?
Yeah. You know, there was this woman, this young girl, on Neil Cavuto. He was interviewing her. She was from a representative from Mizzou. And after all whatever happened, he asked her, "So what is your bottom line?" And basically she spouted out just what you said. It's socialism. They want free college. They want free this, free
they,
that.
Who's they? They want what?
The students from Mizzou, their little organization.
Okay. And
she gave this ridiculous, it was basically socialism, kind of what you were saying about the class system and all that.
Okay, so what I'm saying is ridiculous, kind of like?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I was hoping you would call, and because without your assessment, this would not be a conversation. So,
yeah, you know,
what else you got to say?
Sure, but you know what you're reading. You're just.
I'm a Negro that can read. First of all, that comes to a shock, isn't it?
Okay, so there you go again, trying to.
No. You say the stuff that I'm reading.
You're just going over back through history.
Right.
You know, it is history. And yeah. You mentioned the Jews and the
right.
The Japanese.
So are they wrong?
Camps. You said,
are they wrong?
What are they wrong?
Are you going to blister them for wanting to memorialize this and keep it in the news and remind people that this is a crime against humanity?
But they're not, correct me if I'm wrong, they're not sitting there with their palms out saying, give me, because I was wrong.
Well,
they went on, and they're some of the biggest business owners, and they're doing well. They send their kids to college. The Japanese Americans.
Right.
They didn't sit around and say, oh, they had their land basically stolen from them. They got out and they moved on and succeeded. That's not saying forget it.
Right,
they'll
right.
Never forget it.
Brother, I'm so glad that you exist. Hold on. You talk faster than the sewing machine. I'm so glad you call in because without you expressing those sentiments, I would be lost, honestly. I gotta tell you, because you offer color to it, and thank you so very much for.
I'm not done yet, though.
No, but thank you for, please don't hold back now, because in the process of healing, we need to know what a person like you think, because that's what's fueling this fire, this crazy barn fire.
So let me ask
go
you
for
real
it.
Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So you, and I, and pretty much everybody, mm-hmm. Well, there's portions in the world, but you're against slavery of any kind, right?
Come on, man.
Are you
part ostrich or something?
Okay, yes, I am.
Okay, well then answer your own question on that one. Am I against slavery?
The New York Times editor who was black, he actually went to the Middle East,
right?
And purchased a slave. He didn't believe it, but I mean, he didn't. I think he was in the Sudan,
right?
And he actually, I don't know if it's Middle East, but
right.
He basically bought a slave. He couldn't believe it, and mm-hmm. it really opened his eyes that there's slavery going on right now. The world is not perfect,
right?
Okay, there's actually slavery in the United States where people kidnap people and put them in sex slaves or whatever. But the basic slavery, it's going on right now, and it's a horrible world, and it's a horrible thing.
Right.
These students, I read this thing, it was great. This old civil rights person said, these young people at Mizzou, they're bitching and moaning about stuff. They wouldn't have lasted 2 minutes back in the civil rights era when you had fire hoses, dogs charging you, and they're trying to make like they're such victims. And these are civil rights older gentlemen.
Well, I wish I could enjoy your role of sitting and being anonymous and call in and say the things you say, and then I don't think anything set well with you, not personally. I just think that here's what I say in response to anything you have to offer. See, I've heard this already on Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, but there's a certain portion of the population that only speaks that way. There are other people that speak different. So I just have to, I don't dismiss what you say. I invite that, and it's so healthy to let you tell us where this hatred is coming from. And eventually we'll get to the bottom of it, because all we're saying is be humane in your treatment of other human beings. What's wrong with that issue? Whether we go at it wrong or right.
Okay, so you're talking about the Mizzou thing that started?
No, I'm not talking about Mizzou at all. I'm talking about what happened in slavery and how people were transported and trying to explain the value that how our lives were devalued.
Oh, okay. So you mean way back when a lot of people sold other blacks into slavery.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you, they were wrong, and if I could get my hand around them, I'd commit violence.
You know, there's a great documentary that was on Netflix about slaves in South America. This professor went around and did this document. It is fantastic.
Right.
And you know, the people in South America, descendants of slaves, if you study what they went through, they came out right in the documentary and said, we had it way worse.
Right. And have you been to Brazil lately?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, yeah. Well, kids out there being shot on the streets Brazil is a good example. So keep that one in mind now. And
yeah,
we'll
Chicago, huh?
Next hour, call back. I love you for it, man, and yep. Thank you honestly from the bottom of my heart. I'm not being facetious. You bring so much truth to
this
discussion. So call back now. I'm not being crazy with you.
No
all right?
Problem.
Okay. We're going to take a break.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu. Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Thank you for joining me. We're talking about, and if you care to join in, a good start. You know, circumnavigating the discussion of Black Lives Matter. So anyway, just sharing with you a little field trip that I took a while back to collect documents and trying to understand what was going on and get an explanation and want to put myself as much as possible to understand who I was and why try to get an explanation to why people that look like me or others that are being disparately treated, whether you're female or Asian or black or white, where does this hatred come from and how do we become less of human beings than the people that actually participated? If we understand that, then it will allow us to deal with these difficult times when people present these acts of hatred and behavior. Because though when I see an African American or any human being wrongfully and unjustly treated or resulting in their death or ripping of their civil rights, it hurts. And I'm not even a part of it. I guess I shouldn't try to take on the responsibility or shoulder everybody else's pain. But I believe it's a healthy thing when we witness one human in trouble at the hands of another, then we should speak out. And it's okay to feel pain, feel their pain, empathetic. Caller, thank you for holding. Go ahead with your comments.
Hello?
Yeah, you got any comments?
Oh, yes, good morning. When I was listening to you read off the written documentation, I was thinking, wow, that's a good reason why you would say there is a law that you're not allowed to teach slaves to read. I mean, it's a good read, because if the slaves could read, they would be able to read this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The other thing comes to my mind is because it was so deadly to a people, this form of slavery, I'm wondering, is it really some type of genetic genocide in the mind, you know, not just the physical genocide, but a psychological genocide. Also, I like to say, I can't see how this isn't an act of war. I cannot see slavery outside of a form of war to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, when I heard you reading off the kids, the little children and their parents and no parents and no families, and every other ethnic group can point to a actual country and language from whence they came. We can't do that. We cannot say, oh, I got Japanese or any other type of, you know, national identity.
Uh-huh.
All we have is English.
Uh-huh.
We have no other genetic true memory. So, depending on how we look at this thing, how deep it really is, it's many things.
Yeah.
It might even be something worse than slavery that happened to us as a people.
Well,
and
what my hopes are is, I'm speaking to whether people get it or find it entertaining or whatever. My hopes is that to convey, as I have learned, it's a systemic and institutional practice. It is not an individual practice. Because what
I left something out, too.
I'm reading from these documents, and these documents are required by the government. So, for example,
yeah.
The person is declaring that he has a slave, and it is a requirement that he declare that by the rules and laws of the United States. So then he's willing the slaves to his families and selling them and setting them free on a form that is required by the government. So it is not the individual that props up slavery or the hatred and all the hurt. It is the government itself that tolerated it.
And we are a nation of laws, they say, not of men.
Right.
Now, if the law condones, I call it this form of genocide. I'm at the point where I see it as a form of genocide. Genetic genocide.
Well, at what point now? Because, see, in the old days, you don't want to kill off your work that's going to help you profit on the cotton that you raise. So I don't believe.
Well, slow down now, because there's another level of reality that deals with having zombies.
Well, yeah.
Zombies are very profitable. You don't have to feed them. You don't need medical care.
Well,
you just do your bidding.
They weren't zombies. These were human beings that were
right.
That were in a system that if you escaped from that bondage, the government would be the first to arrest
to penalize
you.
Penalize you.
And support.
If you didn't want to be a slave anymore at some point, they diagnosed it as a mental illness.
No,
they had an actual definition, diagnosis, that you had this, I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
But from where slavery began into who we are now,
well,
I see a continuity even within myself to this day.
Well, okay.
That it's like a form of genocide. Most of the time, I feel like a walking dead person.
Well,
I'm gonna listen off the air, sir.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, yep. Aloha. Caller, go ahead. Thank you for calling. Hello? Anyway, give you a few other bits of information here, and when it comes to this, please understand that this is just laying out what was in place, whether you agree with it or if it's the people in Mizzou or Kalamazoo or wherever, Yazoo, it's irrelevant to me. What I'm trying to convey is that a systemic and an institutional practice to say and overlay that what we witness today in the behavior of imprisonment and economics and disparity in that and disparity in education and all, it has its vestiges in and tentacles and tap roots in an old system. And that system, no one can assure me that everyone participating or benefited from it has cleansed themselves of that. So this is why we see when black people get shot and killed because their windshield wiper didn't work, or they have a parking ticket, or they got out of the car, run, and get shot in the back. You may poo-poo it and trivialize it, but I don't see it as the individual being shot. I want to just know, what is the institution thinking about it? Why is it happening repeatedly? And then I want to have answers. So these answers is to go back and find out why, or at least for myself, if nothing else, understand what was the fabric made of. And so in that, give you an example. In 1809 to 1810, this is from the city records book in Alexandria. At that time, there were only 120 free men, black people. And how did they become free? You know, there's a gentleman named Anthony Johnson. I love this argument. The average person that finds some reason to take issue with another man's plight, and that person vocalizing and his objections to the pain, they like to say, "Well, you know, Africans sold Africans." Well, they were wrong. Well, you know, even in America, African, there is one instance that I can tell you about. That's Anthony Johnson. He actually was a slave. Then he was indentured. He then became free. He purchased slaves. And then he, in turn, was tricked out of one of the slaves and sued the other guy. And that was that. And he won and prevailed. So, yes, you know, money, everybody liked money. You get that, whether you're black, brown, or green, or whatever. And this notion that, well, the Japanese, no. There are many Japanese that I know that are struggling to live. So that in itself is a statement of ignorance, that we all suffer. Everybody suffer from this situation. And we must understand, in order to fix it, if we're sincere about fixing it, don't bristle up when I sit here and read to you actual documents taken from government files that speaks to the truth, or at least describes the circumstances that were the climate at that time, and are they still present? Maybe by listening and learning what is present here, presenting itself, then we may see similarities in government functions today and ask those questions. Why are we objecting to... Why is the government slow and sluggish? Why is it that Hillary Clinton says $12 an hour is what she wants, and the other guys are saying $15? Well, who's right? Who's wrong? You understand? But Hillary is from the South, so what can I say? You know, I can just tell you that. Here's some more. Holmes County. I love reading these wills, and in doing so, I want the takeaway point is, these are human beings that they're giving away. And then they're recording it. The government requires them to record it and make a declaration. And so that means the government supports the ownership of slaves. Or when you submit this, what is this nonsense? Sheriff, go out there and arrest this man for enslaving these people. But our economy is based on this practice at the time, and is it based on now? Our economy is actually a great portion of it in some places in Arizona and Oklahoma and all are benefiting from these very same conditions from jails. Fill them up, private jailers, private jail facilities, making money, creating an economy. What's the difference? So here's... State of Mississippi, Yazoo County, Will James Baines, to beloved wife Catherine, for widowhood of natural life. As soon as debts are paid A Negro girl, age 6 to 10, shall be bought for Lavinia and Jefferson Wyatt. As soon as a son, George Simmons Bond, is born, 1/5 of the estate gives to him. So, these people, you were able to, just like your car, or your baseball collection, or your card collection, or your old camera, I'm going to give that to you. That's what they were able to do with African Americans. Hand it over. And not all of them now. As I say, some were actually freed. But these documents go on to say, John L. Noble, 26, to my two sisters, Mary Baskins and Sarah Baskins, 100 acres of adjacent Ezekiel Calhoun, Esquire, to nephew James Noble, rest of my estate, to sister Mary Baskins, a Negro named Bill, not liable to debts of her husband, Thomas Baskins. Right? One after the other. And again, these are just your regular families. The brother finds himself dying or in weak health, bad health. He then fills out a will. And he gives a human being to his loving sister. Hey, look at there. How about that? I'd like to have. What are you going to do with those Negroes when you die, Joseph? Well, I don't know. You want a couple? You know, well, yeah, I was thinking about growing peanuts or something like that. So, you know, I'd like to have two of them at least. That's how mundane, that's how simple it was. But the implications. They were able to take people, human beings, strip them of their dignity and their freedom. Incarcerate them. This thing about indentured or whatever. They incarcerated. They didn't with no agreement. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning. Yeah, my comment is, do you think there's any other country that has had a constitution that guaranteed slavery? Ours does. I'm unaware of it, if there is.
That guarantees slavery?
Yeah, you know, the slavery was sort of built into our Constitution when it was written. And I'm just wondering if there's any other country's Constitution that did the same thing. I'm unaware of it, but I could be wrong.
I tried to look at some documents that, and there was some things about some African nations, you know, because people say, oh, well, you know, Africans sold Africans and all. And yes, there were slaves, and some countries tolerated it, but I never bothered to look into it because this was so distracting or overwhelming, the things that I had for the American issue.
Yeah, and this idea of for-profit prisons is probably one of the worst schemes, money-making schemes I've ever seen. And I'm hoping that, I hope my candidate, Bernie Sanders, will eliminate that from the American landscape. It's just ridiculous, you know, because they actually lobby, these large prison corporations lobby the state legislatures. And now, you know, they can spend an unlimited amount of money with Citizens United.
Right.
To make as strict a drug law as they can, in hopes of, you know, entrapping as many people as they can, usually young people of color, to not be able to make their bail, you know, and then put them into the system, and then, you know, it just becomes a revolving door. You know, you get out and you haven't paid your first fine, so then you're trapped into going back again, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, but remember the days when everybody was boasting about mandatory sentence?
Yeah, and that's another trick.
And that was a trick, and those were my concerns. Even when I was working in law enforcement, I just felt that so uneasy. You automatically had a sentence. Remember that George Bush and those guys came in, and I think Reagan, and immediately, and I thought, this is the same practices You know, George Washington, for example, was not going to go out and not change, not include in the Constitution or participate in writing any document or producing a document or legislation that would abolish slavery when, in fact, he has 316 of them, and that's where his wealth was coming, right?
Yeah.
But we never talk about that because he's the father of our country. But on the other hand, the freedoms of many millions were bastardized and taken away. And what did he do? We took into the 1800s to just simply abandon the importation, right?
Yeah.
And then 1865, and then we say we took a war to start. The Civil War was over slaves. I ain't buying that because we never really have addressed what provoked people to behave in such a fashion and, and to make a profit. And that's what I said earlier. It's about economics. It's not just about the hate. I think they would imprison whites, Chinese, or anybody as long as they were on top and benefiting. They won't. They don't discriminate. It's just at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all about profit.
And remember, indentured servants, right? I mean, there were a lot of whites that came to America under the indentured servant program, and many of them just decided, hey, the hell with this. And in fact, what happened is that many of them came over here, as documented in Sir Francis Drake's memoirs and vessel, the book is. But but in there, it talks about it. And then there's another book that talks about they became skilled and they were going to grow corn and go out and do their own thing. But then tobacco was king, right?
Yeah.
And so they all start farming tobacco. So now really create a problem because you get more for tobacco in England than you would a bushel of corn. And it took more work. So, but they had a choice. But the African Americans, no. You had to pick it. You couldn't sell. So,
well, what do you think? What do you think of these corporations today and these people where now the United States has, where 10% of the population has 90% of the income and wealth? That is not a vibrant democracy. That's more like a communist country or some African or, you know, South American dictatorship where the top 10% have all the wealth and income, and then where there's a shrinking middle class. You know, who's going to buy the goods and services when there's no longer a middle class? And that is really where we're headed right now. To me, that is should be the main issue in these elections. But the only person talking about it very much is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking to put things like this because people, my theory is, they don't want us to talk about this because there are revelations in this, the issue of slaves and slavery. Mm-hmm. Because you can draw a parallel, and all those answers you seek to combating and changing and making America better, if we were to deal with this, grasp this, we won't see the one percenters owning everything. We won't see the conditions. I honestly believe that, and that's why I focus.
Yep.
Not you can't undo slavery and its hardships and all those atrocities, but if you were to wrap your mind around it and understand it's already an example to show how we can defeat this system that has gotten out of control. All we need to do is put down our fears that, well, it's a sensitive subject. It's not a sensitive subject. We're a sensitive people, but the subject is fact, right?
Yes, it's fact.
It's a template. Definitely. And all we need to do is adopt that. And I think if we stop shying away from it, treating it like it's a casket containing someone that we don't want to look at, no, dive in, understand it, and know that it, the hardships that it presented. And then we can have an answer like a Bernie Sanders who will stand up there and say. But
you know, Carol, unfortunately, we start talking to people about income inequality, their eyes sort of glaze over, but it is actually unsustainable. Capitalism is eating itself right now, and we're kind of like where the French were before the French Revolution, where the aristocracy never saw it coming, And pretty soon when it gets bad enough and people are, you know, when your largest corporation in the United States is Walmart,
mm-hmm.
you've got four Walmart heirs making about $5,000 an hour each, and yet we pay their employees health care and food stamps when necessary, because each Walmart store costs the American taxpayer about $200,000 per store annually as we pick up the tab for the richest and wealthiest family in the United States. That really irritates me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so
hey,
anyway.
Well, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
All right, aloha.
Bye.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting.
Yes.
Go ahead. Hello? I think I lost you there. Please call back if you like. Anyway, this is in... Before the call, the next caller call in, I wanted to... here's something that was shared by a friend. And speaking about Black Lives Matter and understanding... See, it's not all about slavery. It's a continuation of all of these activities that we are not familiar with. Call, I'll get right with you. Did you know that African Americans and many slaves were used for experiments? This is BuzzFeed pulled it up. A gentleman named Dan Vergano, BuzzFeed news reporter, and he come up with an article. And electric shock, brain surgery, amputations, these are just some of the medical experiments widely performed on American slaves in the 1800s, according to a new survey of medical journals published before the Civil War. Previous work by historians had uncovered a handful of rogue physicians conducting medical experiments on slaves, but the new report published in the latest issue of the journal Endeavor suggests that a widespread network of medical colleges and doctors across American South carried out and published slave experiments for decades. The study details four surgical experiments in particular, dating from 1833 to 1858, that doctors performed on slaves. One, for example, involves severing the healthy-looking brain from a slave with a head injury, killing him. Another removed a tumor from an unnamed young girl's lymph node, which likely made it swell grotesquely around her head. The physicians and slave owner, William Aiken of Winsboro, North Carolina, reported in the 1852 experiment on a slave named Lucinda, who suffered from a bony growth around her right eye. Aiken and other doctors disfigured her by boring holes in her head without chloroform, a gas that was used at the time for anesthesia to remove the growth. These cases were reported in respected medical periodicals, read from Europe to Western Frontier. So anyway, although historians are only beginning to explore widespread experimentation on slaves and grave robbing, Kenny added, the findings won't surprise black communities near the sites of medical hospitals who robbed graves or black bottle men who poisoned patients to dissect them is more than a century old, he said. Anyway, electrotherapy, practicing anesthesiology and all of that, this is now coming out in some of the colleges that... big name colleges and doctors. This is something that happened, folks. Again, BuzzFeed, the gentleman's name, you can read the article, Dan Vergano, V-E-R-G-A-N-O. I just offer that tidbit and just to share with you. It's not paranoia. I think that we need to go back and be honest with ourselves, acknowledge that, yes, without this being dismissal, yes, slavery happened. Whether it happened 1,000 years ago, it was wrong. And no one can say, no one has ever studied to say specifically, how long will the effects of slavery linger? how will it affect a society? How will it affect the person that was enslaved? There's no science to that. So is it 5 years, 100 years, 1,000 years? I don't know. But I will take a subject such as this and say, let's talk about it. Caller, thank you for calling.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
And this is a fantastic show today. Two things come to my mind as I listen. One is, I know that when Europe sent their own people to Australia, they sent the criminals. They didn't enslave them. That's one note. I'm wondering why they just didn't enslave their own people. Why did they have to go all the way to Africa and all that and do this whole slavery deal when they could have just enslaved their own people? That's one thing. The second thing is genetics. Genetics is a very, very important thing today. What I'm wondering is a lot of us really destroyed genetically through slavery, like the memory, the trauma, the... I'm wondering how far in the genetics does it go, Mr. Cox, you know, the physiological genetics. And then on top of that, they never let us forget slavery. Even if we tried to forget it, they always had the N-word to remind us of it. That's another point. And the other thing is this. Slavery was a very psychological, medical thing, because when the white man looked at the African with the short, he looked exactly the opposite to him until they started having sex with them young girls and they start getting these mixed breed children. The African, you had to be a white supremacist to practice slavery. You had to look at this other human being and literally hate God to do it. You could not practice religion and practice slavery at the same time and not become schizophrenic yourself. So, to me, there's a deep psychological, medical component to it, and there's also, to me, a genetic memory in us of the destruction of our people during that time. And I'm going to listen off the air, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Right. Yep.
Well, I, you know, you have a... I invite you to say whatever it is you want to say. I don't know about the genetics and all of that. What I can say is that people, against their will, so I don't know how we move to say that it's genetics. First of all, speaking to the basic acts, they were taken against their will. And so forcing someone in a predicament and then saying the genetics, or if I got it wrong. But nonetheless, the issue is trying to lay out to the listeners and for myself, this is what happened. We had slavery. We ended slavery, supposedly. And in turn, these things were set us free. But I'm trying to demonstrate that there were many factors that were not abandoned, that were racist in nature and for profit. And, you know, I think most of us get lost in thinking, well, it was because of race. And like the gentleman said, they look at us and you have to hate someone to subject them to something. Maybe that's your way of psychologically dealing with it. But it's about economics. That's the bottom line. These people didn't collect slaves just because they wanted slaves and we were cute and cuddly looking, you know, like you want a panda. We weren't, it wasn't that. They wanted to make money. They didn't want to even use us in their wars. Remember, they didn't want us to fight. They wanted us to be implements of the economical system that they saw the benefit, free land after killing off the native people, free land and all of that, and growing big crops and cotton and 1,000 acres and obtaining that land. And you needed someone to actually get out there and work amongst the snakes and the mud and the heat and the sickness. You needed that. And you got your profit when you subjected people to those conditions and you fed them the basic rations. But again, along with the slavery bit, after we were freed, supposedly, I'm just going to read you a couple of things so that when we... Ku Klux Klan, this is coming out of a newspaper. It was openly stated that... So, Ku Klux Klan cleans house in California. Commission of every Kliegel in state revoked. Right? Dallas mob gets Negro. These are the headlines. And this is out of the Vicksburg, Mississippi, Friday morning, March 4th, 1910. So this is a period after slavery now. But people, they start to lynch us as they were, we were in slavery. Courthouse doors beaten in and by frenzied avengers. It just goes on and on and on. Troops guard Negro from angry citizen. This was a 4/14/1910. Meridian in a turmoil over killing of officer. You see, we don't get a chance to go to court. We're guilty. That's why they shoot us in the back today. You get out and start running, you're dead. Or there's just recent many others. So, Negro lynched by Pine Bluff mob. These are headlines from the paper now. Kansas student hunt British Negro. These are bad Negroes are lynched. Burn three Texas Negroes. One confessed murder of Ollie and in Curran, Texas. And then it goes on to say that they were roasted him in a slow fire for 15 minutes and then shot him. So we were free then. But again, do we see similarities? And this is the Vicksburg Herald. I invite you to go and look at their page. And it's just laden with, you know, and where every turn of the way, you know, today they say we got our hands out. You know, if you ask for justice, you got your hands out. You know that saying. So here's one in the Vicksburg, Mississippi paper. It goes to discredit or demean the African Americans. Here's the headlines. Quote, "Lordy, boss, this here jail looks mighty good. It show do, boss." End quote. Jim Denson escaped from Georgia mob, recaptured by posse. This is the time when, in these instances, when the mob would come and the sheriff or whatever it is would relinquish, and there would be no prosecution for such an act, for people taking the law in their own hands. Burn three Negroes, three Texas Negroes at stake. One confessed to murder. So, and then we see that, here's another headline, presence of Negro troops in Rhineland is undesirable. So even when we go off to war in this system. So I offer most of this to just speak to and beg the question, when has Black Lives mattered? See, everyone want to argue about that. Well, I don't think it matters, and we shouldn't be doing that and dealing with that, and white lives matter too. Well, I'm here to submit to you, based on the information I have and what I've experienced as an individual, I think it's more of a rhetorical question. I just think it's just a mean, because our lives rarely matters. And we've seen that demonstrated over and over. Grand juries can convene. Video shows, witness shows. And come in and, people even confess, and they still don't prosecute them. So this is what we have when we talk about the African-American experience here in America. And I wouldn't look at this normally and say, well, you know, I don't want to engage in such a debate. But when people are behaving in a fashion, when we say that you're standing on my feet and it hurts, and the right-wing or insensitive person says, well, what difference does it make? You've been standing on your feet for the last 40 years, however age you are. That's how ridiculous they can be. And we're not appealing to the person who's already predisposed of the fact that black people are lazy, we deserve it, get over it. We're not speaking to you. There's no conversation there. So I think most of you are full of yourself when you learn that we have concerns and then you go out to challenge us. There's no challenge. It's mostly falling on deaf ears, if you understand what I mean. Caller, thank you for calling.
Oh, shoot.
Turn your radio down.
Yeah.
Or is that the Martians?
Hi, Carol.
Right.
You know, little dirty little secrets about our way of in America is the. But really, slavery never left us, because what we've done is just transfer it overseas to China and Bangladesh and that kind of stuff. And then we still have. I mean, when you're working for $7.25 an hour, you're pretty much a slave. You're a wage slave. You know, you can't. You're never going to get ahead of it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know. I mean, corporate America, that's their whole game, is how to exploit their labor as much as they can, and that's the most valuable thing, is labor, you know?
Yeah, well, if America answer the solution to most of the plight today, if people understand that, don't see the black people involved as suffering from slavery, just understand the mechanics of it and how institutionally it worked for only certain strata of people, you see, and that were, because everybody that had farms and plantations, you know, pretty much were not slave owners. Not everyone. But it was that capitalist who really wanted to make the bucks, right?
Yeah, you really got to me too. You know, black farmers. You remember for a long. I mean, they finally came to some kind of agreement to help give them some reparations. But you know, they were just getting discrimination for loans and everything, because just because of the color of skin, you know.
Well, that was the United States Department of Agriculture that, why I take on this topic and speak about it today is that we're missing the point. We have the right wing us projecting on individuals, when it's the government whose hands is not clean, when it's the government who, the father of our country, benefiting from this, and many others, and Thomas Jefferson, the guy who wrote that beautiful, you know, part of participating in coming up with the document we respect so well. The answer lies, if we were to look at this practice and take from it, I think half of our woes would be over. But we are so small-minded that we look at it, well, it was the black people, they're crying again, whining again, they want something for nothing. No. How about just simply saying, you know the old saying, canary in the cage, right? Here's a learning for us all, right?
Yeah.
You know, an apology. No, we're saying, watch out, America. That's what I'm saying. We see all these things developing. So, anyway, you know, here's one interesting will that I found in April 15, 1816. Legatees, Dr. Thomas Claiborne, husband, Charlotte Claiborne, niece, Hutchins and Ferdinand Claiborne, nephews. and Claiborne sister by codicil, Freedom of Sarah, Freedom to Sarah, a slave. So here's a guy, when he's dying, he's going to free his slave. So this is how, you know, this is how, again, his March 2nd, 1816, Nancy Butler, Richard Ellis' son, and John Ellis Duncan and Sarah Duncan, and grandchildren, slaves Louisa and daughter, Bet, to be given freedom. So here's another guy, Ellis Abram, giving away, giving the freedom back to the, right, to his slaves and her daughter. So it's, again, is that good or bad?
Well, that's good. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, he had slaves and he used them and benefited. Now he's on his deathbed and he wants to, he see the light.
Well, it's kind of like Schindler's List, you know. Well, I mean, it's been nice that you've been, you know, you've been laboring for me, but, you know, I'll protect you because I don't want you, I need you.
Yeah.
<know?
laughs> Well, but I just think
to do
that,
that dirty work.
I think that we, again, 1819, Sally Butler, a free woman of color, Sally, a Negro girl to be emancipated. So there were some people who was not so evil, but again, they did own the human.
Yeah.
They did buy. They did trade, and they did pluck that person and ripped them from their family, or as what similarities of a family that...
However, you know, the whole movement, that, I mean, the Underground Railroad and whatever, the, you know, were, and these were mostly Christian groups, too. If it wasn't for them, and, you know, they, I don't think they would ever have wanted to really give any kind of justice, but their conscience got to them, a lot of Christian folks, and they said, hey, listen, this is not right.
No, they were across the board, there were people just had such a dislike for slavery, period, both Christians and non-Christians. They know it was wrong, and they fought.
Well, right. Yeah,
the abolitionists, they weren't doing it. They just didn't want to be participating in a nation or be part of a system that saw other human beings as less than human.
Yeah. I mean, it's basic.
Yeah.
It's basic. Dude.
But anyway, that's I invite everybody to go.
Anyway, thank you for bringing this up. It needs to be brought up very often because I'm afraid too many of our population are very ignorant of the history and everything else of how things.
But isn't that the purpose of it? Is you're defining exactly, you're putting your fingers on exactly why we are so ignorant. Because we're told that's a bad subject. Race, oh, don't talk about race, right?
Right.
But I can come to you right now and say, you know, the average Joe out there, I can say, you know, there's a gentleman up sitting up in the clouds there, and he watches over, and he's a white guy, and he has a beard, and he has a white robe on and sandals, and he died for us, and all of that, and no one will call that person crazy. Tell him and try pulling this stunt and say, you know, there's a black guy that sits up there looking down on us, caring for us and guiding us. And
irony. Hey, the same with Santa Claus.
Well,
we need more black Santa Claus.
Well, no, what we need is more educated people to know that Christmas fuels. We talk about the capitalists, right? And so it's one thing to have someone working for free and enslaved and working for little or nothing. It's another to have them producing stuff that they turn around and sell to you and keep you. Okay, Thanksgiving is going to come right around the corner. We had Veterans Day. Now Thanksgiving is going to come. And then Black Friday and whatever, White Friday or whatever they call them, the shopping, right? Who's going to make the money? Walmart, Kmart's going to sell all those plastic toys and plastic bowls and gifts and all, right?
Yeah, with their slaves.
Well,
the working people that are basically slaves.
But one of the points I was going to...
We support.
The other
we
caller.
Support.
Yeah. But we're told that every day we're pumped up. That here comes Halloween, right? Now everybody's buying costumes and blah, 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 right? Who's manufacturing those? The slaves over there in China or Bangladesh or wherever.
Make
them. And then we, the slaves over here, go out and buy them.
And then we work for them.
We then, after the holidays, the so-called holiday is over, we dump them in the trash.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're being asked, talking about being enslaved psychologically, we're enslaved.
But we're subsidizing these slave owners, basically. I'm talking about things like stores like Walmart and that kind of stuff. The food stamps, the Medicaid, everything else that we're providing for these places.
Well, 1807 is when it was abolished, slavery, the import of slaves to the States. But then guess what? You still can bring in workers from out of country to here to do that. But in answer to one of the topics, a subject the guy mentioned earlier, a caller, says Australia and all. Remember, this was, again, about empire building too, right?
Right.
Right. It wasn't just that they hated. So I've often asked myself, well, you know, it's a different situation. They were taken from Africa, so you couldn't kill them all off in Africa. But in Australia, it was unique, and they killed off majority of the native people there.
Oh, yeah.
New Zealand, they killed off a great many of the native people. They didn't have to, but in America, we were transported here, so there was always a constant demand for more Africans. And at one point, there were 4 million African slaves in the South.
And you know what's so interesting about this, too, is... I mean, you know, the capitalist class really would wouldn't about the color. I mean, there's other things you get is maximize the work out of them. But Africans had a identifying look to them.
Right.
but
again,
darker skin.
But again,
when they ran away, they were easier to catch. They died of. Identify themselves.
Yeah, but there's just so much nonsense floating out there to convolute and confuse the general public and the citizens. Australia was part of an empire building. It had, talking about they sent their prisoners there and what have you, and convicts. That may be true, but that just, you know, make it cute.
Yeah.
They were there to take over that country and wipe out the native people. Just like they did here. Everybody was empire building, right?
Right.
So let's not kid ourselves. And if we are intending to fix this problem and do what's right for all mankind, then we got to talk about it and not be so dismissive and trivialize it.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if this helped today, but maybe somebody... Well,
no, I think there's a really psychological thing, too. There's a psychological history that goes way back. I mean, just the fact that, you were brought here, or your ancestors were brought here, against their will, to America, and your purpose was to put you, to wear you out, to work you to death.
Well, Dave, what I say to that is that I'm a patient, I'm not the psychiatrist. I'm just sick and tired of seeing it and hearing it and watching it and observing it. And so my reaction is to try to share with others a little more insight, and maybe we'll get closer to the finish line. But as far as psychological genetics, I just think it's human error to think that we can commit these acts today and not pay for them later or cause harm to people. You understand?
Yeah.
Being selfish. I don't think we need science. I think we just need an understanding. Just call it what it is. It was a practice that is seeing one human being less than the other. And the behavior is atrocious. The treatment is wrong. And to witness the same treatments today is the worst thing there is. It's one thing to keep arguing about, well, do we want an apology, and it was genealogy or genetically, and in their psychology. I don't care. I want to wake up in the morning and not in a world where yet another African-American man has been shot or a woman has been shot because they were pulled over for parking tickets, right? I'm sorry, and anybody disagree with that, tough, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I I just can't believe that we can, no one in their right mind with good conscience can witness such practices and then come out and object to anyone speaking out against it. You know?
Yeah. Well,
but that's just me.
We just have to keep this conversation going.
Alrighty.
And hope for, you know, I mean, it gives a little inspiration that this Black Lives Movement is God. I mean, you know, it's almost remind me of...
Is it a movement or is it just a reaction to what is really going on? Is it a movement?
Because, you know, it's almost this generation's electronic movement,
yeah, but,
you know.
But is it a movement? Who quantified it as a movement?
Yeah.
Is it just speaking overtly about what is going on? Everybody has incorporated inside. They witness it every day. Is it really a movement, or you just see enough is enough already? And then, of course, with the electronics available now, the media available now, we don't have to wait for some corporate news station to figure out that might piss off Walmart if we show that story.
Sure, we got videos all everywhere, so we get the facts. We can get
right.
Record the facts. So that's help for them.
Right. I mean, if the guy is guilty, then give him due process.
Yeah.
You see, but don't shoot him. Give him due process.
Right.
Right. So that's the problem. Due process is not being afforded in these instances.
You keep up the good work, man. All that you always do.
Okay, brother. Well, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good one.
Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.